All right, moving on here on the Mike Boyle Restaurant Show, a special hour. It's going to be on my podcast. It's going to be on Overtime. You're going to be able to listen if you miss any of it. But all of you have been in theater. All of us have been overseas. And we know that if there is a conflict, there is an opportunity for individuals being killed in action. But we also know that when we're training with some pretty powerful stuff. There was just an opportunity to read about 5 Marines that went down in a helicopter crash. They were on a training accident, Tony.
Yes.
We hear about training accidents in the Army. We hear about F-16s going down over the Atlantic Ocean, O'Neill. So one of the things that I was wondering, David, is why don't you take people as a group commander, as a unit commander, infantry commander, Desert Storm, Iraq, later Afghanistan. If something happens to one of your troops, what is your responsibility at that point? And do unit commanders, this has gone on since the revolution, do they still write letters to the families thanking the service person for their service?
Mike, unfortunately, I've actually had that experience and have had several soldiers that were actually killed or wounded in combat. Generally, if they're wounded or killed in action, they're brought to the battalion casualty evacuation center, brigade, division, off to launch duel. If they're wounded seriously enough or if they're able to return to ambulatory and return to duty. For the casualties, it follows a similar procedure going through Dover, Maryland. There's a process for communicating with the family, and sometimes that can take the form of actually a phone call, usually by a casualty assistance officer. But yes, letters are written, and generally there's also a visit sometime after redeployment. So those letters are written, a very tough process to be able to wrap up a person's service up to the point of when they were killed in action. And the family wants to know, how do they actually die? And you can die in training accident overseas and in combat. I've had several soldiers seriously wounded in training exercises, and pretty much the same process. But when it's CONUS or Continental United States training somewhere in the States, it's a little bit faster process.
David Francobilla, your father and your stepfather both were World War II veterans, Korean veterans. You, as a young boy, 9 years old, experienced the knock on the door because your brother, 19-year-old John Francobilla, who's on the wall at the Vietnam Wall in Washington, D.C., a young Marine, was killed in action. Talk about how the chaplain comes to the door. Talk about that experience, because not many of us have gone through that.
My dad actually talked me through that. My mother and father were divorced, and my dad actually came to visit me about a week or two after they had notified my father that my brother was killed in action at the Battle of Hill 881 in Quezon. And my dad had a talk with me, and later in life I found out how he got visited. It's a very tough process. He had a Navy chaplain and 2 Marine Corps officers, one a major, and can't remember the other one, but a major, and they came and they talked to him, and it's a very difficult process. Matter of fact, for those casually notified.
Difficult for the family, certainly difficult for the messengers.
Oof.
You wouldn't want that duty, would you, Tony?
Not at all, Mike. Not at all.
You know, I remember when, I remember the first experience I really had with it was when I got back from overseas, and there was going to be a couple of military funerals on the base, and our unit was called and told that we were going to be on burial service, burial detail. And you don't just show up. I mean, the company commander, the first sergeant said, you know what? You guys, on occasion, can be screw-ups, but you ain't going to screw this up. We're going to practice. We're going to do it right. And whether you carry the coffin, whether you fire the rifle, you are going to be the ultimate respectful of this family in this occasion, because it is a very solemn occasion. And let's talk with O'Neill. You are the administrative officer at Fort Logan, and my guess is that it's probably part of your responsibility to determine who is eligible, who can be shipped to Fort Logan for internment.
Well, that's not the cemetery's responsibility.
Okay.
DOD casualty office will send all the necessary documents to a funeral home or a crematorium, and then they'll call me, and we'll make arrangements for the burial.
All right.
So to kind of pick up from that, Mike, you know, Dave described the process from the military side of the house.
Right.
When you look at it from the VA side of the house, we pick up right where he left off when he talked about that casualty officer coming to the house. Mm-hmm. That very same casualty officer is the one that reaches out to us and say, we have a active duty killed in action. And that's where our wheels start turning, where we reach out to the family. We start getting the paperwork together, talking to the military members command, making sure we get all the information we need so we can provide them the best care possible.
How many spots are there? How many national cemeteries are there? I mentioned three. I know that probably most. Do most states have a national cemetery?
Yes, most states have a national cemetery or a rural facility or a state cemetery. So our coverage, we cover about 95% of the veteran population in the United States with our state, local cemeteries and our national cemeteries. We all partner to make sure that we have coverage for all of our veterans, especially in our rural communities.
All right, we're doing a special hour today. It's the Mike Boyle Restaurant, travel, movies, books, sports, or whatever I feel like talking about. And you know, I had occasion to meet these gentlemen. I had occasion to deal. I've known David Francavilla, Colonel Francavilla, for quite some time. But he put me in touch with O'Neill and Tony, and we're going to take you through a little bit more of what transpires at Fort Logan National Cemetery.
Let's get it on.
We're going to be right back.
Special
hour, special edition of the Mike Boyle Restaurant Show, where we talk about restaurants, travel, movies, books, sports, and whatever I feel like talking about. And today I feel like talking about funerals. Mike, what a downer. You do the restaurant, the movie shows. I'm going to talk about military funerals. And I'm going to share with you something that I think most Americans are aware of, but they haven't seen, they haven't been touched by, they haven't participated in. So I thought, who better than to invite my three guests? My three guests collectively represent over 100 years of service to this country and service to veterans. I've got James O'Neill Hughes. He is the administrative officer at Fort Logan and a retired Air Force man. I've got Roderick Tony Thomas, retired Marine. He is the director at Fort Logan National Cemetery. And I've got David Francavilla, Colonel, retired Army Infantry. Spent over 30 years in the Army, and we're going to give you a little bit of an insight, because you know what? We see every year the laying of the wreath at the Tomb of the Unknown. I remember when my daughter was on a school field trip and was selected to lay the wreath at the Tomb of the Unknown. Very impressive. I also know that we see every year flags being placed on every gravesite at Fort Logan National Cemetery. But you know what? We've got a country of over 300 million people, and 20 million are veterans. 20 million of us have served. And I thought what I would do is I would share a little bit of the events and how we get to the point where somebody is interned at Fort Logan or Punch Bowl, National Cemetery of the Pacific in Hawaii, or even at Arlington, or any of the other scattered national cemeteries across the country. So let me introduce you first to O'Neill Hughes. O'Neill, thanks for joining me. I really appreciate it.
Well, good morning. I'm happy to be here.
I'm happy to have you. His name is James Hughes, but he goes by O'Neill, his middle name. We've got Roderick Thomas, retired Marine, who goes by Tony. And then we've got David Francavilla, who, well, you just go by David. How boring is that? So, and Tony, thank you for joining us. I sure appreciate it.
Good morning, Mike. Glad to be here.
We're happy to have you. And David, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Mike.
I thought that what we would do is we would start with active duty service personnel. I thought we would start in the field. We all know about killed in action. We also need to know a little bit about training accidents, what can take place in theater. So I thought we'd share a little bit of that. What happens when somebody dies, and how do they get home? How do they get back here? And I thought what we would do is then we would also talk a little bit about the services that Fort Logan provides. These gentlemen are all retired military personnel who chose at the conclusion of their military personnel to go into the Veterans Administration. And I know that Veterans Administration has had some shortcomings and some challenges, but I want you to know that these folks that work on the cemetery side have the highest customer service rating of any Veterans Administration division. So we're going to talk with them. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to get started right here on the Mike Boyle Restaurant Travel Movies Books. Right,
welcome back to the Mike Boyle Restaurant Show, a special hour. We're talking about something that most people haven't had experience with and probably don't want to have experience with.
That is the death of a family member who has served in the United States Armed Forces, been honorably discharged, and I am with O'Neill Hughes. He's the administrative officer at Fort Logan. I'm with Tony Thomas, the director of Fort Logan, and David Francabella, who is a unit commander, has certainly had good experience with this. And I shouldn't say good experience, extensive experience with this. And all of these gentlemen at the retirement of their military service went into continued service with the Veterans Administration. I would assume, just getting off track a little bit, I would assume it's got to be pretty gratifying to do what you do. While it's a somber process, I would assume that what you do is very gratifying in that you give the family the measure of respect that they would like to have.
Well, I'll tell you, Mike, for me, when I got out of the military, right before I got out, one of my Marines was killed in Iraq, and it's very, very difficult for me. Mm-hmm. But as I was getting out, I was going back to school, going back to college, working on my bachelor's degree. And while I was doing it, I often went and visited him. You know, it provided me with comfort to be able to go to his grave and visit him. And the staff there were amazing. You know, just being able to talk to them. They were veterans themselves, most of them. And they said, hey, you know, we got jobs here. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, you know, I'm going to school. You know what? I can work here part-time too. And I started working there part-time, and I fell in love with the mission. The mission, being
able—
You
know, if you have a job, whatever your job is, if you feel good doing it, I'm not talking about picking up a check. I'm not talking about the eagle crapping on the 15th and 30th, as we say in the military. I'm talking about a job where you feel like you are doing something beneficial.
It's not really work.
That's a pretty good feeling, isn't it, O'Neill?
Yes, it is. It makes you want to come to work every morning. I enjoy getting up, going to Fort Logan every morning. Yeah. No, I'm taking care of the veteran and their
family. And other people
would
say, oh my God, how can you enjoy getting up and going to Fort Logan every day? I would be so depressed. I would be so down. You go out there, folks, and I'll tell you something. If your heart doesn't swell with pride at the people that are interned there, and it's got to be tough. Listen, if a guy is an 80, 75, 70, 65, 60-year-old veteran, honorably discharged and eligible for admission into Fort Logan, that's one thing. But I'll bet you it has an entirely different impact on the three of you when a 21-year-old arrives.
Oh, yeah.
When a 22, 23-year-old arrives. David?
Absolutely. I mean, there's nothing worse than having a life tragically shut off. I know that you don't do this at the National Cemetery, but where my grandfolks are buried, there's an old custom where there's these cut down trees where somebody dies too young, I guess. And if you look at the tombstones, they actually have a tree that's cut off. And that's what I think of when I think of a young person. So much left to live, but cut off early at an early age. You know, one of the thoughts I was thinking of, Mike, is, you know, a lot of times people don't know they're eligible. You know, grandkids.
And I want to get into that. Good. Oh, yeah. No, this is a nice transition. Go ahead.
No, I'm curious.
Because I thought it was just anybody who is honorably served, honorably discharged, but there's got to be a family consideration probably too. So let's talk about that.
Yeah, so this is one of the messages that I've always tried to get out to the public and let them know. You know, we got a lot of veterans that think, well, you have to have served in combat to be eligible. No, you don't. Mm-hmm. Well, you got to be a Purple Heart recipient. No, I've heard all different ways that you qualify.
Listen, I've heard that Fort Logan is full.
Not at all.
I was exercising with a guy, and he says, Fort Logan's full. And I said, I don't think so. He said, I'll get the definitive answer.
We're not full. As a matter of fact, we're expanding, Mike. We're going to have burial there for the next 20, 30 years. So we got more space.
Started in 1897, folks. And if you've never been out there, it's immaculate. Well, I'm going to transition, but I want to hear. But I remember one time being told that the Oakland Bay Bridge
is painted every single day of the year. Maybe not Christmas, but you understand what I mean. They start on the Oakland side, and they go to San Francisco. They go on the other side, San Francisco, back to Oakland. But they paint it every day of the year. What I want to know is the grass at Fort Logan. And I'll tell you what, I'm an anal guy when it comes to my grass. You come to my house, Tony, O'Neill, David, my lawn looks like a military haircut, high and tight.
Nice.
And, you know, but how often is the grass cut at Fort Logan, or is this something that is ongoing?
Every day. Every day, Mike. Yeah, we are meticulous about that because we want to present the best.
Well, and you know, I want it because I just read a history part of Colorado and talk about the cemeteries. And you go to a civilian cemetery. I'm not talking about Forest Lawn with Marilyn Monroe. I'm talking about you go to a civilian cemetery, and there's a pretty good chance that it's not very well maintained. But every military cemetery I've been to, most recently Fort Logan, you guys have that place.
Director Thomas, I want to tell you something.
Do they use the word Strack? Did they use that in the you're laughing? And they used it to get Strack. We want just
a compliment to Director Thomas and O'Neill and all the people out there, because I'm going to tell you, it's one of the most beautiful national cemeteries I've been to. It is meticulous, but it's also it's fitting. It brings you peace when you're out there, but it's also immaculate. It's clean. You get a view of the mountains.
You know, David, one of the things I tell people on Memorial Day is I tell people, I want you to enjoy your family. I want you to enjoy the barbecue. But take a moment to reflect. And I'll tell you something, folks. If you are feeling a little bit shortchanged by life, you go out to Fort Logan and you just spend a couple minutes and you reflect and you be respectful. And it will make you appreciate the blessings that we have.
Some days when I'm not feeling
you just up walk
to
around
it, I just walk through the headstones.
Yeah.
It's so satisfying because every headstone has a story, mm-hmm. whether it's a veteran or a spouse.
All right, so our spouses, because I've participated in, matter of fact, a World War II veteran friend of mine said he wanted me to be a pallbearer in his funeral at Fort Logan. What about spouses?
Spouses are eligible. Spouses can be buried with their loved one, their veteran.
Mm-hmm.
Dependent children are eligible too. A lot of people don't know this, but dependent children, if you're a veteran, your dependent children are eligible for burial at a national cemetery up until the age of 21, 23 if they're in college.
Okay.
Additionally to that, if you have a disabled dependent child, mm-hmm. you know, they qualify for burial also. So we do have some veterans that have disabled, grown, adult, dependent children that we help plan out the future for that child. In case the parents are deceased, that child's able to be cared for and then later buried at the National Cemetery with their parents.
I would like to talk about a service because I think that, you know, we've all buried somebody. And, you know, they die, the hospital, they're transported to the funeral home, the body is prepared, the casket is selected, they're laid out. And the friends and neighbors come, and a couple nice words are said, the service is over, the body, the casket may be taken to a plot, it may be cremated. Everybody goes home, has a cup of coffee, and tells a couple stories about the deceased. A military funeral is pretty powerful if you ever get an opportunity to see it. And I'd like for you, we've talked about how they wind up at Fort Logan, but I'd like to talk about what happens the day of. Which one of you would like to maybe touch on that? Tony?
Well, I'll touch on it, then I'll turn it over to O'Neill. But the part I'd like to touch on is what we do to get the family ready for a funeral at Fort Logan. So
you assemble about, the family.
You talk about the appearance of the cemetery. All these things are done because we want to invoke a meaningful relationship with those families, because we are creating relationships. Those families will be coming out for years to visit their loved ones.
Mm-hmm.
We got visitors right now that we know by first names because they're out there all the time. We interact with them. Mm-hmm. We help them, you know, through their grieving process, because it's a process. So the first thing they see is they see well-manicured lawns. They see
cut every day.
Cut every day. They see upright white marble headstones that are cleaned yearly. And then they proceed to a committal shelter where we have our services.
Okay.
That's one thing different about national cemeteries is all of our committal services are done at a committal shelter. We don't do graveside services. When they get there, the honor guard is there. The honor guard greets them, salutes the hearse as it comes in, meets with the family, and then discusses what they're going to do. They fold the flag, provide it to the next of kin. They do the rifle salute, and then they beat taps. Every time I attend one of those services, it's just as powerful as the first time I ever experienced it. We're giving those veterans their last honors, and the family is there to receive that also, and they appreciate it. Then from there, we have a committal service where we have a priest that does the final rites, and then we take them to their final place of rest.
Talking with Tony Thomas, talking with O'Neill Hughes and David Francavilla, we're telling you a little bit about not only Fort Logan National Cemetery, but a military funeral in the process. And I thought that it might be interesting for you. One of the things that I've learned from my listeners is that they are sponges. They want information. And if this just, maybe take your son or daughter, maybe take your grandson out to Fort Logan and just share with them a little bit about what has transpired. All right, we're going to go ahead and take a break, and we'll be right
back
on this special hour of the Mike Boyle Restaurant Show. I thought we would share with you the experience. I was recently at Fort Logan National Cemetery, and I wouldn't say I've spent a lot of time there, but I had occasion to interact with my three guests. James O'Neill Hughes is the administrative officer at Fort Logan. Roderick Tony Thomas. Why are you Tony? Why aren't you? Your dad's Roderick, right? And so your mom told you we're going to call you
Uncle
Tony.
Uncle was Antonio.
Okay.
And I got that Antonio as a middle name, and it kind of stuck.
Okay.
You know, growing up, I was called Tony, so.
All right. Retired Marine and director at Fort Logan, and David Francavilla. David Francavilla, retired Army infantry officer, and all of them shedding some light on their experience as veteran administration officers handling funerals and cemetery duties. Talked a little bit about the service, and you were even telling me, David, that after the 21-gun salute, that they'll present the brass to the family, if the family wants the brass?
Yeah.
No, I actually had ones for my father's funeral. He's buried at the National Cemetery near Seattle, Tahoma.
Uh-huh.
And I was very impressed. At the end, they gave me these brass-polished rounds, three rounds. They had seven riflemen and three rounds, and uh-huh. They gave me, and I still have those in my jewelry drawer.
Yeah. All right. And so I'd like to talk about another service that I didn't realize, because it made me think, what do you do? Believe it or not, unfortunately, we saw a situation where one of our sailors fell overboard and they never recovered the body. There's an identification that was just made, O'Neill. You were telling me about a World War II veteran was recently identified in Europe and is being shipped to Fort Logan. So obviously you don't have a casket, you don't have, how do you handle that? If somebody is cremated, is there an area for cremated remains? And I know you also have an area called In Memory Of. Can you talk about that?
Let me correct something first.
Sure.
This is an Army private from Korea, not World War II.
I beg your pardon.
I had my picture on.
Okay, that's okay.
And we are burying him on the 24th?
Yep.
The 24th of June.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently it'll be a cremation. And the family has a choice of going in ground or in what we call a Columbarium wall.
Okay.
So I'm not sure which way the family has
chosen. They haven't made that decision yet.
Made that decision.
Uh-huh.
We'll find out.
Mm-hmm.
And like in your case, when I was working with you, You scattered your father's ashes.
Yes, sir.
And we have an area for, in memory of,
mm-hmm.
where a person's ashes were scattered, buried at sea, missing and never recovered. We honored him in that section.
Mm-hmm.
And the amazing thing about your dad was when you told me Mexican Border War. I'm always remember that.
Yeah. If you think you got all the answers, Tony, go to O'Neill. He had to look up how to put that on the headstone. Yeah. Well, that does lead me, because I wondered, my dad, I mean, he would have joined the day he died. I mean, and it was funny because my dad was born the same year that Fort Logan National Cemetery was born, O'Neill, 1897. And O'Neill's looking at the paperwork and he said, he must have had you real late. And I said, Yeah, my dad was old school. I said, my dad believed that if the Army wanted you to have a wife,
they were issues you want.
That's exactly right. And so, yes, I came along very, very late. But he wanted to be buried in Arlington. And you know his military record. He was certainly entitled. But in 1976, when he died, he had been sick for a while in a home, very financially draining. I had not made my mark in the world. And my mom, we just couldn't afford it. Because it's not that the cemetery, not that the funeral would have been provided free at Arlington, just like it is at Fort Logan for veterans, but we'd have had to get him there, and we'd have had to go back in hotels and all of that type of stuff. So I chose cremation, spread at sea, but it's always sort of been in the back of my mind. And when I saw some things about Fort Logan and some of these missing in action and that type of thing, that's when I reached out. And I will tell you this, I just called the regular number for Fort Logan, and from the instant the phone was picked up, the service was absolutely impeccable. I mean, everybody identified themselves, everybody went out of their way to be helpful. So I think that obviously that same service is attributed, is accorded everybody that goes through Fort Logan.
And Mike, there's a lot of other options that the VA offers also. So like if you have a loved one that's a veteran that's buried at a private cemetery, you can get a government furnished headstone. Okay. You can get the same headstone that we have at Fort Logan because they raid a headstone from the government. Also, if you have a loved one that's buried and you already have a headstone, you can get what's called a veteran medallion. There's medallions for every service that you can get. You can order it. And you can place that on the headstone of your loved one. So we have those options too. We have the in memory of headstones at national cemeteries. Mm-hmm. Then we have the columbarium interment for cremations, which is above ground, kind of like a mausoleum. Then we have the in-ground cremation, and we also have casketed burials. So those are all options that we have at national cemeteries for veterans and their loved ones.
How many funerals do you do at Fort Logan? A day, a week, a month, a year, however you want to...
We average about 18 to 20 services a day.
A day?
A day.
A day.
We start at 8:30 in the morning, and the last one's scheduled at 3:30. And Fort Logan, all day long.
And Fort Logan is ranked the 10th national busiest national cemetery.
And where do the troops come from? Do they come from Colorado National Guard? Do they come from Fort Carson? Where do they come from? I mean, that's a lot of casket carrying, flag folding, and rifle shooting.
They come from
rifle salutes.
Come from Buckley, but it's not Buckley anymore. They come from Space Force.
Okay, all right.
And the Navy.
Was that another base we changed the name?
No, it's another branch of the military.
I know it is.
Oh, and they come from Fort Carson, and the Army and the Navy also come from. Space Force base.
So just on a personal note, since my dad was Army, when the headstone is put up, what's the proper term?
Placed.
Okay, thank you. His honor guard will be Army, right?
Well, not when the headstone is placed. You mentioned that you wanted to have a service for your father.
Yes.
And we have memorial services.
Okay.
That's when I will get in touch with you. Uh-huh. Personally, and give you all the numbers and help you arrange for military honors. But as far as the rifle salute, there's a volunteer organization that would do that.
I see. Okay, the American Legion, I think you said, David.
All Veterans Honor Guard is what they're called.
Okay, all right, terrific. And I was a little bit surprised that Fort Logan, is it because it's so busy? You actually handle all of the headstones right on property. Yes. Is that typical with the National Cemetery?
No.
Or is there a small National Cemetery in Wyoming and you make the headstones and ship them up? How does that work?
Well, what we have is we have a national contract. Where
I thought there were some big factories.
A large majority of our headstones are made on the national contract. Mm-hmm. But some of the more busier national cemeteries, they have on-site inscription. We have on-site inscription, so our headstones are made right there. One of the benefits of that is we're able to get those headstones engraved and inscribed a lot quicker than we would receive them if they were on a national contract. And we're able to get them out there for the families. And that's always a good thing when you get those headstones out there and you can let the family know that their loved one's headstone is in place.
Now, I'm in the restaurant business. And I've always encouraged people, if a restaurant takes a reservation, make one. I'm not talking about New Year's Eve. I'm not talking about Valentine's Day. I'm talking about a snowy Monday in January, just so they know you're coming. Does Fort Logan take reservations?
No, we don't.
You don't?
I hate to say it this way, but it's first come, first serve. It's in the restaurant.
But
first
we've already seat, established that you got plenty of room.
No, we don't take reservations. We don't get involved until the time of need.
Okay.
And but that's when Tony, they were contacted.
But
us.
We do have something that's a little different. We do have what's called a set-aside, reserve set-aside. Mm-hmm. And that's usually when you have two veterans that are married. If you have two veterans that are spouses.
I see. So they'll be next to each other.
They get a grave right next to each other.
But, now, but if a spouse is a non-military spouse and they can be buried with their spouse veteran, are they stacked?
Yes.
Okay.
That's our standard practice now. So,
okay.
So in the past, in the early 70s, 80s, we buried the veteran and the spouse right next to each other. Mm-hmm. But now we look at economy of space. So the veteran or whoever passes away first is buried, and then the second spouse or the veteran is buried on top of them. So they're in the same grave site.
All right.
Tony, I don't know a lot about it, but the pre-burial eligibility program.
That's an awesome program. So what the pre-need program is this a program designed for veterans and their families to find out about their eligibility prior to the need. For example, I've done it. And all you do is fill out the pre-need application. You send it into our national scheduling office. They do the research, make sure you're eligible for burial, and then they send you a letter. And that letter says you are eligible for burial at the time of need at any national cemetery. At the same time, they give you a case number. So all you do is give that to your loved one, your next of kin, and say, at the time of need, call this number and give them this case number.
All right, terrific. Well, listen, I want to thank you guys for today. I got more stuff to talk about. We got a funny story about O'Neill I want to share. But, you know, I think this has been very interesting. I think it's been very informational. And I think it's also something that most people, I think we can probably agree that most people don't make time of death and funeral plans, even give it any thought until bang, you get the phone call. Can we agree on that?
Yes, Mike.
Yes.
All right. All right. I've got O'Neill Hughes with me. I've got Tony Thomas, and I've got David Francoville. We're going to take a break and come back and wrap up this special
right,
hour.
Where's the time, Mike Boyle?
We're coming up on the final segment of this hour of the Restaurant Show, a special edition, talking about military service, military funerals, Fort Logan National Cemetery. I've got David Francoville. I've got James O'Neill Hughes, and I've got Tony Thomas with me. Tony, you started to talk about eligibility, and I thought that it was any honorably discharged veteran. You said that it's a little bit broader than that.
Yes, it is, Mike. And I would say this, veterans that are discharged other than honorable are eligible. There's a lot of misconceptions about what you need. So the way the regulation reads is September 17th, 1941. Anybody that served one day of service prior to that is eligible.
Okay.
After that, you have to have completed your first contract, which means if you enlisted for 2 years, you have to complete that 2-year contract. If it was 3 years, you have to complete that contract. Hmm. But anybody that completed their 2-year, 3-year contract, they're eligible for burial.
I think the simple way I would say is that if you are out there listening and you have any doubts, questions, I think that what you do is you contact Fort Logan Cemetery, 303-761-0117.
You're good, Mike.
And I'll tell you something, folks. You don't get push one, push two, push three. They will come on the line. You'll tell them what they want, what you need, what your question is. They'll identify themselves. They'll either handle it or they'll get you to the proper case handler, case personnel. And so that's what I would say if anybody had a question about whether or not they're eligible or a family member is eligible, to give you a call.
Thanks, Mike.
You've got some notables out there. Don't you have a Medal of Honor recipient or two? Don't you have, and folks, by the way, please do not say somebody has won the CMH, the Congressional Medal of Honor. You are awarded the Congressional Medal of Honor.
That's right.
O'Neill?
Yeah, we have two from Vietnam.
Hmm.
And we used to have one from the Civil War, but they found out he was buried somewhere else. Uh-huh. And we had a guy.
And by the way, you're only eligible for one service. You can have a medallion, you can have a headstone, you can be disinterred and shipped, I suppose, to Fort Logan, but they don't double dip.
No, sir, they don't. It's one service, one veteran, one flag, one veteran. Mm-hmm. So it disappoints families sometimes that every child or relative don't get a flag. Mm-hmm. But it's one flag, one veteran. Mm-hmm. And we have, I think, 48 guys from the current conflict buried out there. They were killed in either mm-hmm. Iraq or Afghanistan.
48.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. And we have a couple cold talkers. We have 7 or 8 Buffalo soldiers.
8 Buffalo soldiers.
8 Buffalo mm-hmm. soldiers, mm-hmm. a German POW. Mm-hmm. But people ask me who's famous, and I tell them everybody's famous. Because nice the veterans response. Put their hand in there to serve, uh-huh. and the spouses had a lot to do to raise the children, take care of the finances, the household. So everybody buried there is famous to me, you know? The spouses gave up something, the veterans gave up something, so everybody's famous.
Well, I think that's, and you know what? That comes through in the service that you, I'm not talking about the funeral service, I'm talking about the customer service. That comes through with each of you gentlemen, because when I had a question, I made a call, and the next thing you know, I met you three gentlemen, you all stepped up, you helped me with my question, you helped me with my circumstance. And on a personal note, and that's not what this hour was about, but I personally can't thank you enough, and I will tell you this. My daughter, who never had a grandparent because of the age, when she found out that we were going to have a headstone for my dad at Fort Logan, she said, you let me know when that headstone's going up, because she's going to jump on a plane and she's going to be back here. And I think that that helps give generations a continuity, no matter how big or how small your family, no matter how geographically spread out they may be. I think that that's a common thread that really holds the families just a little bit more together.
And I'll tell you, Mike, when I was a kid, I remember my uncle, he came home from Vietnam mm-hmm. in his uniform, and it was Army, but it still put that spark in me, you know, as a kid. He was just came in. I was a little kid, and I still remember to this day. So he's buried at Fort Mitchell mm-hmm. in Alabama. Mm-hmm. So it's awesome that memory is related, that legacy has been created through, you know, being able to go see his headstone.
Well, so, and I think that says to the public, you know what, some people, just like you three, over 100 years of service to this country, are willing to step up. Folks, I hope you enjoyed it. A special hour of the Mike Boyle Restaurant Show. I cannot thank David O'Neill and Tony enough for coming in and sharing this information with you.